Last year one is still more or less valid. Okay, so all of those technologies we were discussing before have been put together in those experiments. I'm not just showing you a few pictures of those detectors now in order to start perhaps a bit of discussion there. This is Aleph, 12 meters cube more or less, even though it looks mostly a bit less than a cube, a bit longer. Vertex detector, the inner tracking chamber, a TPC, a calorimeter. The calorimeter is inside the magnetic field. There is quite a war going on. What is better if you have the calorimeter inside or outside the magnetic field? There are advantages and disadvantages. Then you have a very heavy hadronic calorimeter, and outside you have the muon chambers. Aleph was one of the detectors at LEP, and in principle, like this schema here, most of the collider detectors are built. So you have highly precise detectors in the center, which record the tracks and the vertex. You have tracking detectors a bit outside, calorimeters, and then muon detectors. One question perhaps, you see Aleph covers more or less the sphere around the interaction point. Why do you do that? Well, the people who were in the visit with me on Monday probably remember. Why do you build a detector like this? Why do you build it more or less symmetrically around the interaction point, and why do you try to cover more or less the complete sphere around this? Because? No. Okay, first, normally it's an isotropic type of events that you get from a particle at rest. Yeah? But why do you try to cover the full sphere? You want to do the whole thing, and you want to be able to use momentum and also energy conservation. Because if you remember, in the back of your head, at the beginning of the lecture, you heard there are particles you cannot measure with this detector. But you also want to reconstruct the most of the event that you can. Because what is not addressed in the lecture is how to measure a neutrino. And this you cannot do with any of the detectors I've shown you up to now. In principle, you can if you are very, very lucky. But in order to measure neutrinos, you need very large volumes because the interaction of neutrinos with matter is on a so small scale that you get, if you traverse the full Antarctica, you get from one neutrino traversing it, you get something in the order of less than 100 photons. And this is quite a massive detector. So that's not so easy to measure. But neutrinos have a mass that we know at the latest since, when was it, 99 or 2000, when Kamioka published that there is a mass difference between neutrinos. Nobody can tell you the mass of neutrinos, but we know they have one because we know they have different masses. Why that is, ask Michelangelo on Monday. He will be pleased to discuss this with you. He is a specialist on this field. But apart from, yes, as I just heard the word, there are many of those neutrino detectors. There is the mother of all those detectors is Kamiokande, or Super Kamiokande, which is just a reservoir of water with photomultipliers around. Then you can use something like Amanda, which is in the South Pole. Why do you do it there? It's quite simple. The ice in the South Pole is clearer than every water that you can have. There are less bubbles of oxygen or whatever enclosed there. than you have, even if you have purified water. And you have a large space, and you have the nice feature that ice is stable, so you just put your detector and it doesn't float around. Like it, for example, happens in Antares, which is a nice experiment if you work there, especially you are on the boat most of the time. But unfortunately, I don't have sailboats, so I'm not going to go there. Anyway, Antares has the problem. They do it on the seas, on the bed of the sea. But the problem is they need somehow a tracking system where their photomultipliers float around, because they are put on something like trees with cables, and they have a very high precision tracking system where they just float around, because you have currents at the sea and everything. And they have a very big problem with plankton, because those little things also emit light. And they already, I saw an event of the first test array where they had a very, very slow particle, and they were all wondering what it was. It was a straight line, and apparently it was some kind of fish that also illuminated. And later this thing made a few kinks, and then they saw what it really was. They first thought their electronics were slow or whatever. But that's the main problem with these neutrino detectors. You have very large arrays with things you don't know how to handle. Yes?
Do you know if there is the same problem in Nestor program?
Nestor.
Nestor. It's in Greece, in the Ionian star shape.
They will probably have the same problems as Antares has. They will probably have the same problems that Antares has. Very probably. If it's the same type of experiment. But actually, I have to admit, I didn't hear about Nestor yet. No. Actually, I know Antares only because the coordinator of the central detector of Aleph was the spokesman of Antares for a long time. It's the only way how I know Antares. But no, that's not my field. I don't know. I don't know all these experiments. Sorry. Okay, you have these spherical detectors, but you also have detectors at fixed target experiments. And one of those is, for example, NA48. NA48 wants to find the answer for the question why we consist of matter and not antimatter. So they are measuring the matter-antimatter ratio in certain decays, and they have a fixed target somewhere. So in principle, they only look in one direction. They don't look around the sphere. They know they have particles coming here, going to a target. So all the decay products will also go in this direction. And exactly this they are measuring. They have one magnet here in the middle, and before two, and afterwards two wire chambers. So they measure the track before and after the magnet. And then, because of the bend by the magnet, they know how long the magnet is, they know how this was bent, they know the momentum of the particle. They have a so-called hodoscope, a localizer detector, and then calorimeters and muon counters. So in principle, you can make a detector which is just a single-armed so-called spectrometer. At LHC, there will be the ATLAS experiment, and you will also get a visit to ATLAS, which is a very large detector. I'm not going into details. You will see it, or CMS. But one thing I want to stress now is those experiments, an experiment is not only a detector. Everything you have seen up to now will bring us to a large cloud of bits which tells us there was something during this event. And now the main work of the physicists in the outside institute start, because they look at such an event and try to think what it was. And this data analysis is one thing that you need to have. And actually, many people at CERN, especially in the IT division or the IT department, are working on possibilities to analyze things. And also, how to get the data out. We are talking 200 megabytes per second coming from one of the smaller LHC experiments. We are talking about 16 gigabytes per second coming out of Alice, which you have to store somewhere and which you have to copy also to the laboratories where the other people want to analyze the data. For example, CMS, which I learned yesterday, want to online copy, which means they want to have one copy of their data here and one copy at Fermilab so that the American collaborators can use the data. So we need to provide 200 megabytes per second stream over the Atlantic. Fortunately, this is about 25% of the world record, which is also held by CERN currently, but only over 2 or 3 hours and not over 20 years. And we don't know if we can really provide that with this reliability. And also the part, you have to control all these detectors. We were discussing all the time, we have high voltages, we have a gas which has to be there with a certain purity, we have to have shieldings and so on. All of this needs to be controlled. And if the temperature changes, or for a time projection chamber, if the pressure of the gas inside changes, then you get completely different signals. All this has to be controlled. So all this we did not cover here, all the infrastructure, we only covered the real detector principles. The only thing I want to advertise now, just shortly, is this possibility of a working group, that will look at data. I think you saw a few slides by Michelangelo already about the working group. And actually the idea of this working group is that those people would look at a few events, classify them, not too much, because this is what you do with Kron's bubble chamber pictures. But the main idea is to take all those data sets, motivate why one analyzes them, and look at such distributions and get a result like this, for example. This is, well, this is from a website, therefore probably it's not really too much visible, is the famous lab measurement, combined lab measurement, that we only have 3 light neutrino species. This you can do within something like 2 hours from scratch, just to think about how you can, how you would do the analysis and then really perform it. And the idea would be scanning those events and afterwards doing analysis. And if I get this projector to display the other one, then we see what can be done. For example, you have a list of data sets from LEP. We have also data sets from HERA in Hamburg. We have Higgs searches, if somebody wants to find the Higgs in the data, if really somebody thinks it was overlooked in the data analysis we did 4 years ago, then you can try to analyze the data. You choose the data sets. You can do some data analysis methods like plotting certain variables, like in this case, the good energy, which means the energy which we have measured to quite some precision. And here you can give a so-called cut. A cut means you just look in a distribution in a certain way, only at a certain point. So I only want an event where the good energy is more than 50 GeV and the number of charged tracks that were found is exactly 2. And if you do this, then you see that's how it should look like if theory is correct. That's real data, that's real data, that's also real data, and then you can compare it with the theoretical prediction, which looks like the same shape, but the size is a bit different. But one has to think why this is the case. And with this, you can, also with pupils, can measure certain things by either looking at the event pictures like we did, or by in the next step, just think what you want. You want two clear tracks, which are muons. You want two clear tracks, which are taus, two clear tracks that are electrons. And then you can, for example, check if they are all the same ratio, which it should be. If all leptons are the same, they should have the same ratio. You should get the same number of E plus E minus, mu plus mu minus, tau plus tau minus. If you do statistics in school, which is probably going down more and more, but if you do it, if your pupils have some idea of statistics, you can do real physics analysis in two or three lessons with real results. Questions so far? I'll have a look, yes. Yes.
I would like to know how you consider quantum mechanical measurement problems in your experiments and in your detect. Somebody mentioned Heisenberg some time, and there are also problems that the whole thing should be considered as one thing, and if you make a measurement here, what happens here?
Yeah, well, actually, we are not so much concerned with uncertainty, because we are not really, I mean, the uncertainty comes into play when you do the data analysis, like here. For the detector itself, you always do macroscopic measurements on macroscopic scales, and there you are really outside the problems with Heisenberg, for example. You can get into those problems back if you start extrapolating, if you start doing real measurements then, like secondary vertices and so on. But actually not really with the experiments we do. And, bon, I mean, quantum mechanical problems, I mean, quantum mechanics tells us many of the effects we have to expect here. Like, for example, just to find out that this process here is possible. There's quite some quantum mechanics in there. And I mean, I did this a bit just on the back of the envelope, just showing you how this works. In principle, if you ask Michelangelo to explain Feynman diagrams, it will probably take more than the 3 weeks that you have, because probably all the angles I've shown are just wrong. But you don't need to use these steps in the Feynman diagrams. That's always a question of the level, how deep you want to go in there. Okay? Good. Whenever you have questions afterwards, either contact Mick or contact myself directly. You'll find me on the phone book. You all have access to the web or to email even, and just send me an email or call me. Usually I carry this thing, and if there is something. And you will see me back tomorrow afternoon in the discussion session and at some point in all the visits that you will have around. Okay? Then you now have still 10 minutes of break left before Kron comes, I think, with bubble chambers. Was it? Thank you.